76. Came a coachman. It seemed colder out, the passageway retaining a dankness Netherton hoped had nothing to do with urine, ersatz or otherwise. He saw Lobeer draw something vaguely familiar from a topcoat pocket, gold and ivory glinting in her hand, reflecting candlelight in the instant before Fearing closed the door behind them. Her tipstaff, he remembered in the sudden dark, a nastily mutable badge of authority, a cologne atomizer one moment and a handgun the next, but always of ivory, trimmed with gold, with somewhere, invariably, a small, symbolic coronet. He hadn't seen her produce it since shortly after he'd first met her, but associated it with trouble of a very immediate sort. "Why do you have that out?" he asked.
"Go ahead of me toward Cheapside," she said. "Be prepared to do as I say."
Netherton did, almost immediately aware of an approaching racket from the direction of the street, as of running boots over cobble echoing off the walls of the passage.
"Keep walking," Lobeer said.
He did, noting the darkness in the passageway decreasing in a peculiar yet familiar way. Another effect of hers, and, like the tipstaff, something he hadn't seen recently. Assemblers in the very fabric of the city subtly lighting her way. Now they were in that particularly foul-smelling stretch, and here a running figure in high black boots appeared, smiling pleasantly, a dented top hat jammed low over its forehead. Quite tall, broad-shouldered, and bearing a massive mallet of some kind, partially upraised, it ran straight toward them.
"Down,"
ordered Lobeer, which Netherton would certainly have obeyed had their assailant not been literally atop him then, shoving him aside with its massive weapon, which reeked, Netherton noted, of claret. But by then he'd instinctively poked his stick at the man's waistcoated midsection, a large, gloved hand batting it aside, then seizing the ebony shaft and flinging it away to clatter hollowly on the wall beside them. Leaving, Netherton discovered, the stick's handle still in his hand, with something still protruding from it. As of its own accord, his hand thrust this forward again, producing a bright flash of light accompanied by a brief but vicious sizzling. Looking down, he saw his hand around the stick's handle, from which extended a slim, straight blade into the waistcoat's fabric, smoking now, scorched, though he saw no blood. Again, the smell of claret. Then the man toppled backward toward Cheapside, still smiling earnestly, the massive mallet's head making surprisingly little sound as it struck the cobbles.
"What the actual fuck?" pronounced Fearing powerfully behind them as the passageway and the fallen figure were flooded with mercilessly white light.
Squinting, shading his eyes, Netherton made her out, her pistol now apparently tipped with a small, cylindrical floodlight.
"Do you know him?"
asked Lobeer, who held, Netherton saw, a sort of blunderbuss, its barrel gold, stock of ivory.
"It's Bertie," Fearing said, "my neighbor's coachman, but seems to have helped himself to a publican's bung starter."
Which accounted for the claret, Netherton thought, noting that the mallet's massive head was of wood.
"Something seems to have gotten into him,"
Lobeer said, bending to pluck the upright sword stick from the supine figure. She glanced around, then retrieved the hollow ebony shaft from where it lay nearby, smoothly sheathing the one in the other. She passed it to Netherton, who accepted it gingerly.
"That's really terribly bright, Clovis," she said.
The floodlight was immediately extinguished, though leaving, Netherton noted, a single sharp red dot centered on the fallen bot's torso.
"Were you expecting this?" Fearing asked.
"No," said Lobeer, "though the aunties were able to give me a last-minute inkling. Step over, Bertie." This last to Netherton.
"Is this an assembler weapon?"
Netherton asked, looking at the stick in his hand.
"No," said Lobeer. "Ash made it from your clothing and whatever else was available nearby. You happened to place it in such a way as to instantly fuse Bertie's power supply. Good night again, Clovis."
"Watch your back," Fearing said.
"As ever. Cheapside, Wilf."
Netherton began to walk.
"Good night, Wilf,"
Fearing said behind him.
Good night, Mrs. Fearing, he said, pretending to glance back.